Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Taos in Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. This is going to be a fun one. We're going to be taking the Crab Cake Tour back out on the road in April. I've got dates together. Big announcement. We're going to be at Fadley's. We're going back to live radio just on Fridays when the Orioles are at home. It's a fresh day for Oriole baseball, and I like talking about baseball. I like talking about the past of baseball and certainly the future of baseball. And I like when projects bring cool things to my attention. And I always learn something. And Alan McCallum has been trying to teach me about Negro baseball leagues for all of these years. We've been friends for 30 years. And I was taken out to the Owings Mills station where there's an entire wing that really speaks to the history of Negro baseball in Baltimore. I've seen some fields and been around town, but this is going to be a really interesting segment because there's a Baltimore Black Sox Memorial Project. I've been waiting to get Frank Lance on for a couple of weeks now. We've been trying to organize this. He is the president and CEO of Parks and People. You can go to parksandpeople.org, learn more about this. But we're going to learn about it right now about this project. Frank, first things first, I know you've been busy out there. I've been waiting to get you on. And I kept saying to Karen, the longer we wait, the closer we get to baseball season. So the better this thing's going to be here. First off, how are you today? Welcome in.
I'm doing well, Nelson. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much for having interest in this project.
Well, before I get to your thing, let's talk about my thing, because everybody needs to know about this thing on Owings Mills. Don Moeller used to beat on me all the time and say, hey, if you take the train, even if you don't take the train, take your car. My wife has dropped me off and picked me off up at that station when we lived downtown. That's a beautiful thing. I mean, I've been to the Real Museum in Kansas City. It's the closest thing we got to one here in Baltimore. And you can just walk up and see it anytime, see real Baltimore baseball history there for everybody.
Absolutely. So for anybody who has not seen it, in Owings Mills, in the Owings Mills branch of the library, there is the Herbert Simmons Memorial Museum for Negro League Baseball. For those people who don't know, Herbert Simmons was a Baltimorean. He played in the Negro Leagues. He owned a shop, embroidery and screen printing shop in Baltimore. And post his death, a museum was erected that's currently housed in the Owings Mills Library. It's fascinating. It's four floors of artifacts, of history, of everything that you want to know about Baltimore Negro Leagues baseball is there in that museum. If you haven't gone, please go.
Well, this brings a lot of my things together because Coppin State's involved in this and a lot of local people are involved in this. Run me through, first off, what Parks and People is and really what you're trying to do here through a legacy of baseball. And, you know, we're all trying to lift Baltimore. I mean, you know, every single day we're trying to tell stories. There's plenty of places telling the bad stories, plenty of people like you trying to make good things happen.
And that's the key. Everybody's heard some negative stories, right? So David Simon writes about The Wire and everybody's heard negative stories about Baltimore. But Baltimore has so many positive jewels. And so my organization, Parks and People, is a 40-year-old nonprofit that has spent its 40 years lifting up Baltimore. And we do that by building parks and playgrounds and green spaces all around Baltimore City. So a few years ago, 2018 to be exact, one of the projects that came toward us is, would we be interested in helping to bring out of antiquity and into the minds of people today, the history of the Baltimore Black Sox here in Baltimore? So for those people who don't know, they played from 1913 through 1936. One of their headquarters sites was in Westport, that African-American community known as the Middle Branch with Cherry Hill and Westport and Leadenhall. That's where they played. Great names, Satchel Paige, Josh Gibson, Joe Gans, Joe Lewis. These were Baltimore Black Sox players, and they won a championship. And so, Nestor, you and I were talking about it a few moments ago. So we've talked about the Herbert Simmons Museum. You and I both have been out to Kansas City to the National Negro Leagues Museum. We want to erect something here in Baltimore that's a destination site where people can see and honor and remember the Baltimore players, the people that lived, breathed, ate Baltimore, and gave homage to baseball here.
Well, I think in the history part of this, that Baltimore was a real key component in all of this, not just in the Civil War and being sort of a border place, but from the baseball perspective, going back to this era where, you know, Babe Ruth was running around in the big leagues and playing over in South Baltimore as well. And his dad, obviously, I got Camden Yards. His dad famously had the bar downtown and all of that. But everything over my shoulder out toward St. Agnes Hospital was sort of where Babe Ruth was. My understanding, and I've been led to believe different stuff, but I, you know, in reading up on the history, I've been over where there's a little brewery now, the Peabody Breweries, where the Oriole Park was. Tell me a little bit about my understanding of of Negro baseball 100 years ago here, other than just Westport, this was a very, very ripe area for African Americans to play baseball, and it was a street game here at that point 100 years ago, right?
And Nestor, I love that question because it shows your knowledge of history. Remember, when the Great Migrations took place, when African Americans by millions moved from the South North, Baltimore was one of these destination cities. So you have places like Philadelphia, New York, Chicago. Baltimore was one of those cities. So what does that mean? This rich history of intellect and physical ability came to Baltimore also. And with that in mind, this love of baseball came to Baltimore. And so what you have are people who are first generation post-enslavement, first generation post failed Reconstruction, Plessy versus Ferguson, and they have a love for their country and a love for the sport of baseball. But segregation, separate but equal, did not allow them to play Major League Baseball. So they created a league of their own. And when you talk about sites, there were five different sites that history has shown us. So Dr. Bernard McKenna, who wrote the quintessential book on the Baltimore Black Sox, has been able to identify five different sites at which these teams played. One in Westport, you mentioned Oriole Park. There are others around that C shape that I mentioned earlier. And what we want to do here is lift all of this up for Baltimore to say, there is some great history. And Nestor, if I may quickly, and it's not just the men as ball players, but who were they holistically as individuals? Remember, having to live through Plessy versus Ferguson, failed Reconstruction, World War I, having to live through these things, who were they holistically? Were they activists? Were they business people? Were they intellectual? They have had a love for the sport, but they also loved their country and they loved what they were doing.
And they also had no opportunity, you know, until Jackie Robinson came along. And, you know, if you look at the history of baseball and the racism and in our country that still exists to this day, but the baseball side of it, when Jackie Robinson happened, it was, as I understand it, clearly opportunistic, but it sort of, it broke the Negro Leagues apart, right? Like it ended the Negro Leagues, which were a really good thing for Black business owners in different ways, but certainly staged differently. And the goal was to be assimilated and obviously going on and playing, open the doors for the Hank Aarons and the Willie Mays. It didn't come that long far after, you know, those players wouldn't have been allowed 15 years earlier. Some of the great players that ever played the game, that this really is a lost, that these museums and these libraries hold really lost history and lost facts of who Babe Ruth would have been competing against, who Lou Gehrig would have been competing against back in the day.
And Nestor, I love this. You and I could talk about this forever because this is really the why about why we're doing this project. It gives us the opportunity to bring these things to people's mind today. So I want to touch upon what you said. I asked, so I, like you, went out to Kansas City to the National Negro Leagues Museum. I went to DC, the Smithsonian Museum of African American History and Culture. And I naively asked the question, when did the Negro Leagues end? And I was given two answers. If you want the formal ending, that was at the end of the 1960-1961 season. But what purists say is that the Negro Leagues ended the day Jackie Robinson signed his contract with the Brooklyn Dodgers. The day that integration was possible in Major League Baseball, the creme de la creme left the Negro Leagues, went to Major League Baseball, which severely diluted the quality of the Negro Leagues, and it limped to its demise and finally ended in 1960-1961. And so to your point, some would argue that people of color lost through integration, right? Lost through assimilation. And one of the things that was lost was this great league known as the Negro Leagues.
Well, you know, my people came from Venezuela and, you know, my cousin played on the 66 Orioles, but he came up in 56. I got the rookie card and Frank Robinson came up 56 and Frank Robinson played in Cincinnati and had darker skin, looked more like you than like me. And I look more like Louie. Man, the guys coming from Cuba and from Venezuela, similar situation, just based on the pigments of their skin, not allowed to play in the 40s, allowed to play in the 50s. You know, I mean, it's a sick tale of American history that I think a lot of people want to sort of subjugate and say it didn't happen or not talk about it, because it is sort of seedy and an unseemly part of this. But I love that folks like you are keeping this alive. And so you're working on a project. Give me the project of what you're working on right now and what it has to do with the Black Sox and the Black Sox name that you're trying to keep alive.
All right. So there is a project on which we're working. There is a greater project of which this is a subset. There are a team of individuals, the Baltimore City Mayor's Office, Reckon Parks, Parks and People, and others. We're working on redeveloping that entire 11-mile stretch known as the Middle Branch from Baltimore Peninsula all the way around to Masonville Cove. Within that, there will be an African-American Heritage Trail and the Baltimore Black Sox Memorial. Since these communities were Black communities and the Baltimore Black Sox played there, we will erect a memorial. You mentioned earlier, working with Coppin State students who are doing the history and the research, along with the Afro Archives, we will have statues of players. We will have a mock field. We will have a dugout. We will have a kiosk, a destination place where people can come, push button, learn about people, look at the information, go on website, and find out who were the Baltimore Black Sox, the owners, the players, people who came to games, what the stadium looked like, and this history can come alive again.
Well, I got to get history professor Dr. Dupree Wilson on from over Coppin State, find out about the history of my city, an African-American Heritage Trail. So we're talking about Westport right by 295. If you have a trail there along the water, and I've seen this, they have one in Wilmington. They have one in Omaha, Nebraska, over a bridge. Those kinds of walking areas and that marshy area down there that was sort of left for dead because of all – it's sort of where the water sort of stops inside of the harbor. But my wife and I live downtown. We would see people rowing from Cherry Hill. They have a rowing community over there. But that would be just such a beautiful walking trail along the backside of there. Time frame on that, cost on that, and goals to get from here to there so I can go walk on this thing before I turn 65.
Great, great questions. And so that is the point. We are looking to redevelop that area by putting in those kind of amenities there that other communities already have. As you said, a walking trail. There's a Baltimore Rowing Club. Hopefully, if we can raise the kind of funding necessary and activities like this are raising the awareness to help us raise the funding, we will be erecting the first statue in the 2026 timeframe. And we don't want this to be a one-time event. We want to be erecting statues annually to keep the attention and to keep the interest going in this work. So we'll be doing this annually. And as it relates to funding, right now we're in the earliest stages. So we're looking at the site, we're doing community engagement. We are looking at the marketing plan. That's about 200,000, but the actual work itself will be anywhere from 15 to 20 million.
Frank Lance is our guest. He is the president and CEO of Parks and People. You can find them at parksandpeople.org. Talk about their latest project, Parks and People, a legacy environmental nonprofit in Baltimore City that administers equity-based reparations work in Baltimore's Black communities by providing quality out-of-school time programming and building state-of-the-art parks as a way to spark community redevelopment. Yes, I am reading from that. How can people help? How can they get involved and participate in this with you?
So the way in which people can get involved, please go to our website, Nestor, you've already mentioned, www.parksandpeople.org. We want your input. We want to know what you know, whether or not you're connected to any former players, if you have any artifacts, what you would like to see. We don't want to prescribe what this looks like. We want this to be a community gathering place. So we want.
I have a Judy Johnson autograph I'm going to donate to you. How about that? Is that good?
Love it. Thank you.
He signed my Frederick Keys scorecard one time 35 years ago. I was out in Frederick, so there. That's with Leon Day. It might have been a Negro baseball thing that night. It might have been. A few guys were alive back then. Leon Day was alive, and we were always honoring him back in the early 90s, right?
And he will be one of the statues that we're going to put up.
See that? I'm learning stuff. So you come back, you let me know what's going on. We got to get the professor on, talk about this. And it's a baseball project. Why would I want to know about or be involved in it? So I'll meet you up in Owings Mills for a sandwich someday, Dr. Lance. All
right? Sounds
good. Dr. Frank Lance, our guest. Find them out at parksandpeople.org to learn more about the Baltimore Black Sox and Black Sox history. And anytime, anyway, you find Alan McCallum, he'll sit you down and school you up the way he's been schooling me up for 30 years. So Dr. Lance, Alan's been preparing me 30 years for this interview, so I didn't sound stupid. So I sound smart because Alan's made me smart. So I appreciate you. Find them out at parksandpeople.org. You can find me, the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, taking it out on the road in April. Luke's going to be at the ballpark. We're going to be at Fadley's on Fridays, live from 2 until 5. It is all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. In conjunction with the friends at Window Nation, I got my Window Nation shirt on here. The doors are the key part this year. I did Windows. That was so 2 years ago for me, but you can still do Windows, 866-90-NATION, as well as our friends at Jiffy Lube and Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping my water pure. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive, and that was a pretty positive one right there.